Priority number one is excellent service delivery, effective financial management, In that system, what each stakeholder in customer relations and others, those that are listed there, so members can just go through them. This is just a summary of the three programs that the authority is having. There in that slide, you will see that it's just a summary of the responsibilities of each program and also the outcome areas of each program. For instance, if you look at program one, which is administration, that program is very responsible for the overall strategic management and support of the authority. And those are some of its outcomes. And then it's the same if you look at program two and three.
Okay.
There are really some key questions that the Committee of Elements needs to consider. And I will point members who they are written documents. So the instead of time, I won't go further along. So I think members during the preparations or during the meeting, they can just go through those quick questions that they need to consider. And then in terms of budget allocation, members will recall that the authority, when it's reporting on its finances, is not using the same format with other entities, government entities, of which that's really confusing. And the committee raised the issue with the previous financial year that the authority needs to really look at that and ensure that its reporting framework is aligned to the one that is prescribed by the National Treasury. But that's not the case in this financial year. Those inconsistencies are still there. In fact, that position of the CEO at the time, in the Sunday Times, last Sunday, so because the guy that they appointed, because he was appointed for a 6 month period, apparently he didn't renew his contract or it was not extended. And then this is just a historical project of the finances of the authority. You will see that during the 2013-14 financial year, the overall expenditure was 164 million, and it has a surplus of 81 million. And then the last financial year, 2014-15. The authority had an expenditure, incurred an expenditure of 168 million, and the surplus was 17.4 million. And the projected or the budget estimate for the current financial year is 199 million. Looking at that, you see that really, the financial history of authority is not really impressive, because we'll notice that there, in a number of instances, the authority incurred some or reported or recorded some deficit. But I think it should be commended that over the past 2 years, we have seen a semblance of stability financially, and I really hope that this is going to continue in the medium term. But given, the challenges that the authorities face, it is very unlikely that we will see this, semblance of financial stability continue within the medium term. Once again, I think the question is for that section are also, linked to the break. So if members can kindly, during the deliberation, look at those. And then as far as the revenue is concerned, as I've alluded earlier on, last year the revised estimate of the authority was 185.9 million. The operating expenditure was 158.4 million, and the surplus was 17.4 million. The revenue for this financial year, for the projected estimate, is 199.6 million. We are not sure whether it will have a surplus or deficit. And then if you look at program allocation or budget estimates for programs, you will see that the administration program for the current financial year sitting at 82.3 million, which is the largest, you know, like allocation. It is followed by the law enforcement, which is 73.1 million. And then at the third place is the communication, training, and registration program. And also members will recall that although in nominal terms, this really indicates 18.5% increase, but really in the real percentage terms, when taking inflation into consideration, we'll see that it's only 13.9% increase. And then in terms of revenue, authorities, most of its revenue comes from administrative fees, and then there are non-tax revenue, and then the transfers received, which the larger portion comes from the administrative fees. And it's projected that this is going to continue over the next year. Administrative fees will really continue to be a major source of income for the authority. And then this is the program analysis in terms of program one administration. There, what is noticeable is that projected expenditure is going to, most of it is going to be under personnel expenditure. In other words, a lot of the funds will be spent on personnel expenditure, and that will be followed by administrative expenditure. As far as performance targets are concerned, members will recall that in the authority's last annual report, the Auditor General really raised a number of concerns regarding some of the performance indicators. Although some of them, in terms of the SMART principle, they were okay, but there were those indicators that were really problematic, as indicated in the AG report. And I think that information is in the brief. Perhaps members can just look at there. But I think the committee noted the concern, the fact that some of the targets were really not, you know, like measurable, and also when applying the SMART principle, some of them were, there's sort of a lot of inconsistencies. And then if members look at program one in terms of target, most of the program indicators for this program remain unchanged over the past financial year, though some were reverted or refreshed. These include the performance indicator on audits, and then there's also a performance indicator on percentage of employees, which is supposed to achieve a performance rating of over 3. And that is also noted as a new indicator. But in fact, a target of 90% achievement was already set for 2014-15 financial year. I think I will leave all this program analysis, because that is mainly contained on this. So I will just go to the key issues that really the committee needs to pay attention to. All this information is there on the brief. In terms of the human resource management, at the end of the previous financial year, members will recall that the staff establishment of the authority was sitting at 244. In other words, they were having 244 employees, but the approved establishment was 281. In terms of salary level, members will see that from salary level 7 and 10 is where the largest number of personnel is. Last year, at the end of the last financial year, at that level, there were 139 people. And then if you look at 11 and 12, which is senior level, senior management, there were 14 people, and also 11, 13, and 16, there were 11 people. In terms of the expenditure for the current financial year, it is projected that the level 7 up to 10, they are going to have, so there's going to be an increase in terms of personnel from level 7 and 10. So they are going to have 140 shifts as compared to 139 the previous financial year. And then if you look at level 1 and 6, which is, I guess, where like the investigators and everything, the mid-level people, in terms of last financial year, they were having 80 people, but now they are projecting that they are going to increase that number, and they will have 95 people. This is the long-term infrastructure plan that is included in the APP and the strategic plan. In terms of expenditure, they are projecting that an amount of 750,000 will be used for computer equipment. And then an amount of, you will notice that there is huge increase on the software. And I think it's in line with their strategic goal of changing their systems in position so that they can be able to deliver the legislative mandate by introducing by changing their systems, introducing new way of doing things. But what is concerning is that there's also a huge increase on the office equipment to the value of 3.7 million, of which it's really interesting. Members might need to really look at that and ask whether why there's such an increase on office equipment. Likewise, there was an increase on office furniture, which is also really concerning. And members might need to follow up on that. These are some of the key concerns that were raised by the committee during the 2014 CRRR. The issue of the head office lease is still really one of the crucial issues. And also the issue of the disposal of the Acadia building. According to their response to the committee, they said that a letter was sent to the minister, for him to make a final decision with regards to that building. So I think the committee needs to find out whether the minister has made the final decision with regards to that building, the Acadia building. The issue of appointment of the CFO was also raised in the committee's report. The issue of leadership and capacity of the council was also raised. The issue of research, you will recall that for the whole year they identified only 2 topics. So the committee was very concerned about that, but they have since indicated in their response to the committee's recommendation that those 2 research projects were finalized, and to that end the recommendation was made. But I think you might need to share the findings of those 2 research projects and also provide the committee with the research outcomes. There was also an issue around backlog on criminal investigation that was raised by the committee. The quality and liability issue was also raised, and the differences between satellite and regional offices. So these are some of the issues that during the discussion the committee might need to focus on and try to get feedback on them. The strategic plan and APP of Sierra changed in some significant ways in the 2015-16 financial year when compared to the previous financial year. And it should be noted that unlike in the past, these changes are for the better, and it is really hope that they will really enable the authority to have a more meaningful contribution to the realization of the NDP goals. Challenges still abound, we cannot run away from that, there are a lot of challenges that the authorities still face. But despite some challenges over the previous financial year period, now there seems to be a semblance of stability at the authority on both leadership and the financial front. The new chairperson of the council seems to be really dedicated in sort of taking the authority further to a better position, and I think he might need all the support that the committee might provide him with. However, the unreliability of financial information remains a major concern, as there are various discrepancies within the reported figures and the reporting format that the authority is using. And I do believe that indeed the damaged reputation of SIRA can only truly be improved through sound financial management and a marked improvement in service delivery to all stakeholders and the South African public at large. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Simoni, for a very good document. Questions from members? Honourable Kalabana.
Two things. The new head of SIRA, now that the old graffiti mayor is gone, was it an internal appointment or has someone been brought in? Is it someone we know? Anyway, I'm just interested. I don't know who this person is, where he came from. May I ask the second one before we start? One of their biggest, okay, one of many issues, but the biggest one to me was their inability to collect the revenue. And if it did arrive, they actually didn't know who'd paid it. So there were millions flooding in and nobody knew it was from. It was chaos. So I'm not very pleased. I'm slightly encouraged to hear you say it looks as though the finances are in better shape. So we just have a bit more on the collection of the revenue. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for me? Okay. Thank you, Timbani.
Yes. Thanks a lot, Honourable Member, for those questions. As far as the appointment of the acting chair of the council, he was from the presidency. I'm not sure which processes are followed in appointing him. I'm really not sure. It's not indicated on the documents I looked at. I'm not sure that it was the executive authority's discretion sort of second him or whatever. I think might need to get clarity on that when the authorities here.
Remember the previous interim chair was Mr. from the presidency, but he's, I think from the outside before the meeting that appointed now Professor Masipuku as new chair. So we will get an opportunity to introduce him, but he is of course an appointment because of the act by the executive authority. That's normally the process.
On the issue of revenue collection, I think that has been a persistent, you know, like challenge within the authority. It's really a problem. Hence now they are trying to sort of look at their systems, you know, like to make sure that those challenges are addressed. But it remains to be seen whether, you know, like we'll see any new changes with regards to that. It is really, depriving the authority of the necessary, you know, like financial resources it needs, you know. The question is whether is it because of mere incompetencies or is it because of some system failures, you know. That's really a challenge. It's really a challenge that the authority might need to, you know, look at, more especially if it wants to continue in this, you know, like sort of positive project that we have seen over the past 2 years, you know, if it wants to make sure that, you know, like if it wants, you know, its sustainability. Other issues here that I didn't mention is that the council said that they are going to explore a new funding model. In other words, they can diversify their sort of revenue generation. Instead of focusing on administrative fees, they want to look at other ways of generating funding. And they said that there will be policy to that effect, of which the committee might need to follow up on whether that new revenue generation fund model has been developed as of today. You know, the committee might need to look at that. Of which I think that's a great move because operating in that environment, you might need to diversify your source of money so that you can ensure that, you know, like the business runs smoothly, you know, because really it's such a contested terrain, you know, like we have private security or the industry actors who will always question or contest the issue of tariff increase. So you cannot really rely on that, you know, as a source of funding.
The court case. And I recall they put up their fees by hundreds of percent, and then the private security industry took them to court saying you just can't do that. But last time they came out, I think the court case had been resolved yet. Do you know the status?
I think the last time I checked, the court case was decided in favor of the
security in Australia and say, you know, I think the local nation, it was decided in their favor. But I think what I missed to pick up in the ABP and the strategic plan are the legal fees associated with that. You know, I really didn't pick up with that. Yeah.
Colleagues wouldn't get there when they were with us in January. That indicated they made a kind of agreement, you know, that the higher fees that was taken in by them will be paid back, you know, to the security industry over a 3-year period. And the new determination was now made. But I mean, we must also, I think, follow up today, you know, what is the progress and what is the state. So we'll have to know the financial viability, of course, we will have to focus on. Thank you very much. Yes.
Sorry, just some furthering on the Barra's question. The new fees has been gazetted in February, and the comment closed at the end of March. So they could maybe provide feedback on the comments they received.
Shimani and colleagues will then ask the private security industry delegation to join us. Right, thank you very much, honourable members, delegation from CEDA, members of civil society, PNG. Representatives from the Minister's Office, welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Police on this Friday. Let me just to indicate that we today continue our hearings on the budget and, of course, the performance plans and strategic plans of institutions that are looking on this Portfolio Committee. We already dealt with South Africa Police Service as well as IFED yesterday. Next Wednesday, we're going to deal with the Secretariat on Police, and then we're going to finalize our report on the 6th of May. Maybe just to indicate to the delegation, welcome to them. I think we saw CEDA at the end of January, March. And then we also had their contribution at the National Fair on Monday. That was, I think, was of good quality. So we have them back with us. We also today welcome the new chairperson, Professor Mazibuko, and maybe the chairperson must introduce, or the CEO must introduce her to us, that we also know who she is. I'm going to first ask just the members of Parliament and members of the committee to introduce themselves, and then I will go to the director. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning to the first members.
Melamba gaetso di nala ka kenna e mo le batsi ke lo go la committee e ke a leboga.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. I'm Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
And I'm Diane Tolovana, member of the committee. Good morning. My name is Jerome Ake, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Pinde Mola, a member of this committee. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Director, Mr. Shauke.
Thank you, Chair. I request General Finlayson to introduce the council members.
Very good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Major General Finlayson, the council member. I'm going to introduce the council members that are here. But in absentia, we want to say thank you to Mr. Joy Ratebe, who was hearing the vote in the absentia of an appointed chairperson. Let me introduce to you our chairperson, Professor Dobisile Mazibuko. She's with us, she has other commitments, but she deemed it and very important that she appeared before the committee today so that you know who she is. But if you want her resume, I think it can be sent to the honorable members. And then I've got advocate. Yes, we appreciate that women now have been recognized. But it's a tantamount task for her. Sarah is not a little business. So we welcome you, Chairperson. And I would like also to introduce advocate Ntoko Zomthembu, council member on my far right, Mr. Benjamin Ntuli, the council member just next to me, and then I will hand over to the director to introduce the executive members.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning once again to members of the committee, as well as the members from the House. Chair. The president today is on my left is Ms. Mpomfikwe. She's our deputy director of communications. Behind me on my right is Advocate Ntepa, as well as Mr. Raymond Kevin. He's our deputy director of finance, Victor K. CFO. That is the team. We also have Ms. Zanele Ntimbu, our corporate secretary, as well as our senior manager, HR, human capital, Mr. Aloma, sitting on the far right hand side. That side.
Thank you very much. I think let's start with a presentation.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the presentation, in terms of the overview, we'll take you through our mandate, strategic priorities, the objectives as well as the strategic oriented goals, as well as some of the key achievements we've made. And then we'll do the programs. Program 1, 2, and 3 will be done. Program 1 will be done by the Deputy Director of Finance, as well. Program 2 will be Advocate Ntepa, as well as Program 3 that will be done by Ms. Mufikwe. And we'll, of course, take you through the medium-term budget by the CFO. In terms of the strategic overview, Chair, we prepared the strategic plan that also complies with the National Treasury over 5 years guidelines. With the KPIs that are prepared in line with the National Development Plan. The mandate still remains the same, Chair, over the mandate that is still within the current Act. Of course, the main ones, just go through them, is that we need to promote the legitimate industry, as well as ensure that we, members of the industry, act in the public and national interest, and also ensure that we determine and enforce minimum occupational standards, our conduct by service providers, and ensure that we have a transparent, fair, objective, and timeless registration process, and also ensure that there is active monitoring of the security service providers within the industry. And also, we also need to ensure that we promote the interests of the users of the industry. So those are some of the mandates that we have, some of the mandate that we have in terms of the Act. Just to also take you through the situational analysis that we did. When we did the strategic plan, we went through an analysis of the situation at hand, and we came up with some of the goals that were still relevant at the time. We haven't changed much. We still have excellent service delivery as one of the priorities, effective financial management, industry stewardship, stakeholder and customer relations, enabling environment with competent skills as a skills workforce, efficient and effective processes that we still need to maintain within the organization. That is in terms of the overview. Chair, in terms of the approach to sales delivery, from a law enforcement point of view, we have reviewed our strategic focus, and we then plan to focus this year on some of the sectors that we have within the industry, most in particular the retail sector, the security officers that are within the retail sector, and some of the non-compliances around those environments, the residential sector, and there we're referring to security officers guarding security complexes as well as other residential areas, hospitality sector, as well as health and recreational facilities. I think also, this is just a summary, the educational sector is also part of those, just to mention a few. From a stakeholder point of view, we've also looked at some of the initiatives that will be taken through this year from a change point of view, the compliance forums, which we're currently doing, the radio interviews, the editorials, industry circulars, information brochures, and so on. I just don't want to list the whole list, including, I think, also social media platforms, which we've already began, and we're seeing some very interesting interaction with our security officers from that platform, Chair. We've also identified some strategic objectives that we said we are going to keep. Chair, the main purpose of that, of course, like we said before, is to ensure that there's always good governance and sound financial control, to ensure that CIRA remains an effective and reliable, with an effective and reliable IT system to be able to effectively achieve a mandate. We also want to ensure that we also have at all times competent, ethical, and skilled workforce, and also, as I said in the beginning, to promote awareness amongst members of the public and the industry at large. And Chair, the objectives are also summarized there. I don't want to go through all of them because I might sound repetitive, because they're part of also those were taken from the mandate of the Act, as I've read before. Just to go through the programs, as we said, we have three programs. For the interest of the members, the first program in administration, which is responsible for the overall strategic management and service support services for the authority. The second program is law enforcement, ensuring that there is compliance in minimum occupational standards, as well as legal services, that's part of it, prosecution services. The third program, of course, is a very important one as well, that forms part of our core mandate of the organization, and that's responsible for stakeholder management, communications, as well as registration, and most importantly also training that relates to the industry, research and development as well reports to that. So those are the three problems that we have here. And I think the next slide here gives us an overview of what are the outcomes, and also, as I said in the beginning, it might also sound repetitive. The outcomes are based on exactly what I've already said. This is just point different so that we ensure that we achieve these outcomes. The first one being the effective revenue management, that's the core of program number one. I'm just going to read the very first ones in each program. The second program, increased monitoring, which is the core, increased monitoring of service providers to ensure that there is compliance with existing legislation, which is also core. On the third one, of course, there are three core ones. The first one will be increased compliance, mainly registration process, efficient and effective registration process, and lastly also to ensure that we strengthen research of the core business in order to support external initiatives that we have. So in terms of some of the key achievements that we have attained in the long run, we just thought that it's important for us to ensure that we take you through some of them. We've recently looked at ways in which we can deliver the service in areas that we do not have footprint. So we had some initiatives around Bloemfontein, Free State, and George in Western Cape, which were very successful. And also, we had some improvements also on the registration side, where we've managed to improve the registration turnaround from 20 days to 15 days. And also, if we look into industry regulation, we have ensured that these 3,000 businesses were withdrawn, those were that were not complying with registration. Compliance as well as the registration requirements. From an industry training point of view, we have managed to also build capacity through workshops, and we have implemented successfully some of the training program, which never existed before, and we are going to be seeing in the nearer future implementation of a minimum entry qualification for the training standard. As of now, any person that wants to train as a security guard, whether it does have matric or does not have matric, is able to train. So we want to set a particular standard in regard to that. From a law enforcement point of view, the number of active individual security officers have increased from 487 to 516 active during the year 2014-15, which we will later talk about when we deliver the annual report. I think those are some of the key achievements here. From here, I will hand over to my colleagues to take you through the programs. But before I do that, Chair, I just want to bring the following to the attention of the committee. There is a slide, there is a table under the APP, specifically under Program 1 on the ASOS site, that talks about the quarterly targets that was omitted when we did the presentation, the tabling of the third plan. And for that, we discovered that it was omitted during the meeting. We would like to apologize to the committee for that mistake. We have brought in the corpus of that table for the members, and we will also undertook to ensure that the omission is properly corrected through the formal processes that include an errata. And as I said, we take responsibility for that. We don't know how exactly it happened. The whole plan was put through a needle, an eye of a needle in terms of the scrutiny and the review. But as we understand, sometimes there is a human error, and we do apologize for that. I will hand over to members.
Thank you for that introduction. I'll maybe just a few questions on members. The first question from my side, maybe more towards the board. On page 4 of the strategic plan, in the foreword by the Honourable Minister of Police, he indicates that if they directed the council to do a review of the governance framework of the council, and I think in your presentation that we've had in January on the 25th, there was an indication that the council will undertake a review of the entire governance framework with a specific focus on the key three, segregation of roles between council and executive management, the review of delegation of powers, and the development of council members. I think it's a critical issue. We saw this whole ESCOM story, the necessity for the board and the executive to be quite sure of their roles. And we had all the past experiences, I think, with this institution. So if we maybe can get from the board, just, and maybe we can get in writing also, but maybe a brief report on where are we with those processes that was requested by the Honourable Minister, but also, there was also an indication by ourselves in January that process is underway. Can we maybe just get a board to report back on that? Other members? Honourable Abatsi, Honourable Mabele, Vija.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. You spoke of the minimum entry qualifications for the industry. Will this include a relook at the duration of the training? Because, like you know, I always talk of that week is too short. My second one is, your head office list collapsed in July 2016. What will happen there? My third one, the building Belvedere is still not sold. What is the situation? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable thank you, Chairperson. Just while we are talking at the level of objectives of the authority, the committee received a briefing from the Institute for Security Studies last week Tuesday, and one of the findings from a study of theirs that they highlighted was the fact that 60% of aggravated robberies or street robberies, which face mostly people in poorer communities. So it's the kind of scenario where people are walking to or from the taxi rank or to or from the spider shop and that kind of thing. And, I mean, those kind of robberies are opportunistic crimes, which can very easily be alleviated or more easily alleviated by a strong visible patrolling presence. SAPS has the issues which we deal with on a regular basis in this committee, but I've always been very interested in the role that the private security industry can play more strongly in addressing that particular crime phenomenon. Because as I've said before, unfortunately at this stage, private security is a luxury service for suburbia and the middle and upper classes. And I note that in the Act, one of the objectives of the authority, Section 3K, is to encourage ownership and control of security businesses by historically disadvantaged people. So I'm just curious so taking those two points in mind, the fact that street robberies affect mostly poor people in township and in homeless settlement communities, and the fact that there needs to be this ongoing drive for increased equity in the ownership of the private security industry. What has the authority been doing, or is doing, or is planning to do to promote that, so that the access to private security becomes more equitable, to also address the needs of poorer communities that can be done by private security?
Thank you, Honourable. Questions further on the overview. Remember, some of the racial issues we will deal with that when we go to the programs. But on the part of honor,
I don't think you'll deal with this later. Do you have any insight? I mean, it's quite obvious the president hasn't signed the bill as it was passed. He knows there will be huge challenges to it if he does. So, do you have any information on that? Any indication? Or will it simply be allowed to lapse or be sent back to the committee?
Honourable, please. Thank you, Honourable Karabana. Honourable Bajji.
Thank you, President. One of your responses to the BRRR 2014 is to develop a country chart. How far are you regarding this matter? Thank you.
Members, that's the questions on the overview. Over to the council and then also to the director. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was requested to deal with the first question that relates to the council. The reason for that is that the council mandated the management to look into developing some specifications in respect of the issue of governance. That has been developed. It's waiting for council to review it, and from there it will then be taken out to get the service provider. That should also cover the issue of the council charter, because the whole review of governance entails the whole governance structure in terms of the King Tree, as well as also developing a new council charter for the whole council. There is a meeting that I'm aware that will be coming in the next month. The council will look into it so that to finalize the matter forward.
Just as a small follow-up on that, was the question of development of council members. This part of portfolio committee, we want to be sure, because I referred to one example. If we as an oversight committee don't exactly drill down and say, you know, what is the development plan for the next term, you know, to also that members can come and play with your legislative environment, the challenges that they're able to also guide. Can we just get something on that as well?
Chair, the development plan for the council is also going to be part of the whole framework. We're looking at getting a service provider that would address that as well, where he will be able to give the council what areas of development they should go into and how the council should assess itself in terms of performance and so on going forward. So that is going to be part of the plan. Perhaps the council will share at a later stage with the committee the plan going forward.
I think it would be appreciated if we maybe can get that finalized approved document from the council, you know, that we can just also review it to have assurances that all those issues that was raised by the minister as well as by yourself in January are given the necessary attention. Thank you. Other questions?
In response to the training question and the duration, I need to clearly indicate that when we engage with all stakeholders, when we're building our capacities or the training providers, we're very specific about their duration. And we've looked at the entire process, and yes, we'll be looking at the current training durations in order to make sure that it is aligned to the skills program. And we've also assessed what we call by using the cost versus benefit model. Because even to get now, people are saying are going for a cheaper cost for the green one, and want to make sure that even if we are entering into the skills program, we don't compromise on that quality. So the duration and the cost aspect has been taken into consideration when engaging in capacity building with all the training providers. And I must say the responses from there has been very positive, although from the learners themselves, like now, they're going to spend more time. However, we're indicating to them that it's for their own benefit. And if we're introducing professionalism within the industry, those are the key things that we need to put into place. So we are addressing that with all the training providers involved. With regard to the research that was done by Security Studies, the Institute of Security Studies, I think when we had the compliance forum, it became also eminent, the whole issue of how do we address the security around, the crime issues around the townships, how do we make private security accessible to the poor. And what I will say to the business who are participating in the compliance forum, I said, this is an opportunity because we've also done a research, consumer research, where we sort of try to understand the dynamics, where people go for, from a township perspective, where people go and utilize the services of private security. It became important for them to sort of start reviewing their models as businesses and how they become accessible to everyone in South Africa, not to the elite and those that can afford. So we've been engaging with the business community to sort of say, review your model, make sure you're accessible to the entire community, so that's good, because you have the whole issue of security is not just for affected individuals, but the entire South Africans. So that is really looking into that aspect. Over and above the empowerment issue, we are now doing workshops that will definitely transfer skills. We've outlined that as part of our compliance program for the 2015-16 financial year. How do we empower businesses to enter the industry, or those that are interested in doing business within private security to enter the industry, but with the knowledge, not just enter the industry, with the knowledge and the skills to provide excellent service, because we don't want to compromise on service at the end of the day. So we have looked at that from a compliance point of view.
Thank you, sir. The aspect around the head office lease, Chair, it is indeed so that the head office lease will lapse sometimes next year. Management will be presenting to council in the next meeting to consider looking at the extension of the contract first for a year, whilst we're still waiting for a final decision to be taken as to whether we are going to have our own building being erected. And of course, there's matters to consider. You will recall that the last report I gave to the committee was the fact that we were waiting for National Treasury, which was assisting in developing the feasibility study. We have been in contact with National Treasury. It turns out that the process of doing the feasibility study has actually not gone anywhere. It's still in the initial stage of it. It's just a draft document that was done. So we have requested a meeting with the Office of the Sixth Service, which we're dealing with the issues of the building on behalf of the minister, so that we are able to clarify going forward what will be the best way going forward. I'm quite aware that there was already a decision taken in the past by the previous minister that the building in Akiria will not be sold. Instead, we should look into developing or building, constructing a building that will accommodate Sierra, so that we move away from leasing buildings in the future. Just to put finality to it, perhaps when we granted the appointment in the next month or so, we will be able to finalize it with the office of the minister. But the likelihood is that the lease will be extended. I cannot see how, even if the decision is taken, we will be able to build the building within the next 8 months or so. So it's likely that the lease might be extended by a year or two.
Okay, where is the hiccup? From your side or from the minister's side?
The hiccup is not from our side. I think, Chair, to be quite straight on the matter, there has been a drop in momentum on the matter, because we have said to Treasury when we first engaged them that Sierra does not have the money to build a building for its own. When they first initiated the issue around the construction of the building, they said that would assist. Then when we said who's going to finance it, they said Sierra should finance it. It's quite clear that there was in a legal value on the fees. They don't have the money to build the building, so there was no way we could build the building. That's where the momentum dropped. I think a decision has to be taken, and we're looking forward to get a proper direction from the minister going forward as to how this whole matter will finance going forward. The fact of the matter is, even if we were to build the building ourselves currently, we wouldn't have the money to do it. Chair, I think I'll ask the CFO to assist in terms of the annual cost. I think it was around 10 million, if I'm not. Okay, 10 million per annum.
Responses?
I think we might have covered almost all the responses in the first round. I'm not sure if there's anything that we have here. My apologies. The final one was around the deal. We still sit in the same position, Honorable Chair, where we know that the bill is with the President. We are still been told that the bill is being considered by the President, so there is no movement in so far as that is concerned. All we've had is the debate around the bill and whether it should be in the controversial aspects of it. Thank you.
Let's go to the presentations. I think let's do all the presentations. The different programs, and then we'll allow members, as people, we can go to questions. Over to the Executive Director and his team. Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'll present Program 1, which is Finance and Administration. The measurable objectives of the program are to ensure efficient leadership, management and administrative support to the entity. There are three sub-programs. The first sub-program is Finance and Administration. Second sub-program is Business Information Technology, and the third sub-program is Human Capital. Looking at sub-program one, our strategic outcome, effective revenue management, and we have two KPIs under that. One is to annually adjust our administration fees, and the second one is to review the annual fees.
And these fees are critical in the sustainability of the organization, as it's funded from the industry and doesn't receive a government grant. The challenges around the annual fees, I think, are known to everybody. The court case sets the organization back, and we have reviewed the annual fees currently, and they effective from the 1st of April 2015. So our annual targets on each of these is to adjust the fees annually, the admin fees and the annual fees, and to ensure that in the process of reviewing the annual fees that we get sufficient buy-in from the industry so they aren't challenged and further sets the organization back. The second strategic outcome is to develop a sustainable funding model, and annual targets are to develop a funding model. We actually managed to develop a funding model towards the end of March, which has been reviewed by council, and it's the annual targets going forward are to refine the model as the years go by. The third strategic outcome is compliance with the relevant acts and regulations, and the key performance area of defining that outcome is to ensure that we resolve the audit findings, both internal audit and external audit. So we currently have resolved 97% during the 2014-15 year, and the annual targets going forward are to resolve 100% of all the findings. The fourth item is compliance with the relevant acts and regulations and the overall financial health of the organization, and key performance here will be based on the audit opinion received. And the target is to receive an unqualified audit report. If we look at the quarterly performance of those items, the fees, the process of the fees is to take it to the final publication. The funding model is to develop it across the year. The audit finding results is the audit findings from the AG are normally given in the second quarter, so we'll start with about 45% of those findings being resolved and move towards 100% of the audit findings resolved. The second sub-program is the business information systems, and the first strategic outcome is to ensure that we have an efficient and secure IT system. And the key performance areas in those are basically to ensure that we have a data recovery process in place in which we can recover our data and get the organization up and running in the event of a critical failure, and the annual targets are set out. The IT user satisfaction. We have surveys amongst all the users of our system and to determine the rating of the IT systems, and we intend to increase our user satisfaction over the next 3 years, and we'll annually review our IT governance structures. The 14 targets set out, the process is in various quarters and details. The third sub-program in finance and administration is human capital. The first strategic outcome is to ensure a competent and performing workforce. And the KPIs that achieve that strategic outcome are the frequency of conducting employee performance assessments. Currently we're on biannual, and it's budgeted to go towards a quarterly assessment. The second KPI is the rating of 3, which 3 is taken as being average performance, somebody performing at the required level. So we are looking at scoring the human capital department on the interventions of any employees that don't score a 3. So we undertake to get 100% of growth. The quarterly targets on these programs are going through the assessment process, the interventions of the employees, and the training programs which could be put in place. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kevin. That's my take on. You welcome, Program 2.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair, honorable members, council members, and Big Barrett. I'm presenting program 2. The purpose of this program is to ensure that there is effective regulation in the security industry, enforcement and law compliance to those regulations. Our measurable objectives is the program aimed to ensure that security service providers comply with the regulations by doing regular inspection for both security officers as well as businesses. In so doing, to ensure that those who are not complying with the regulations are charged and prosecuted accordingly. We have 3 sub-programs under this main program. First one being enforcement, which covers basically the investigation and the complaints that are received in respect of the non-compliance. And the second sub-program is compliance, which effectively look into the assessment of the compliance and the non-compliance in the industry, and the report on that, where there is non-compliance identified at times, if it needs a late investigation, it will be referred to enforcement. The third sub-program is legal services, which comprises of the legal services, which is mainly legal advisory service and prosecution in terms of our code of conduct inquiries that we had against businesses that are in breach of the code of conduct. Our strategy for 2015 to 2018 strategy objective for the annual targets are as follows. Strategic goal number one is to ensure excellent service delivery through effective regulation in the security industry. Our strategic outcome is increased monitoring and investigation of security providers to ensure compliance with existing legislation. The indicator, key performance indicators to that will be the number of businesses inspected to assess compliance with CRIGHT. Our baseline as of the current lapsing financial year was 3,520, and our current target will be 4,260 and 4,690 and 5,160 during the downtime. And another one will be the number of security officers that we inspect. We intend to inspect 2,500 security officers as opposed to 22,270 that which is our current baseline. And you see during the outliers will increase our inspections in this area. The other one is the percentage of site inspections that we'll conduct now on the particular centers, and on firstly being the retail center. This is the new indicator the director in his overview indicated. We'll ensure that of these inspections combined that we have highlighted, 15% of these inspections will be conducted in the retail in the retail sector, where we find retail security officers, mostly in malls and your ordinary supermarkets and wholesalers. Another one will be the site inspection, that the percentage of the site inspection that we'll be conducting on the educational facilities, your universities, your schools, and colleges. Will ensure that of the inspections that we conduct, 10% of them are from that particular sector, and it will be 10% in all the outer years as well. We'll also ensure that we conduct certain percentage, which is 10%. industrial and corporate facilities, especially in urban areas, that is where we find that. Industrial areas will also include the isolated places like your mining sites, where we have, during our investigations, identified that there's a number of non-compliance, especially on the use of the people who are not legitimately registered with us. Remember that this was especially covered in the Medupi, where we find about 63 unregistered national persons who were employed there. So we will also cover those areas. We will also ensure that 15% of our inspections are also covered in the residential areas, your complexes, your individual homes where the securities are deployed, including the most common factors in Gauteng, your home gate. We will also visit those areas to ensure that 15% of our inspections that we conduct, they will be from those particular areas. The percentage of investigation that we that will be finalized in respect of non-compliance of the complaints that we received, will ensure that 60% of or 65% of them is attended to, as opposed to 60%. That was the baseline. My humble apology. We, in the end, the director will also ensure that the 650 is in fact put to the correct perspective of the 65. It was a spring of jam, my apologies. In the outer years, we'll also we increase it to 70 and 75 respectively. The criminal offense, criminal cases that will be, or the percentage of the criminal offenses that will be open against the non-compliant, we will keep it at 75 for this financial year, but going forward, we'll ensure that we'll increase that by 85 to 90. Not that we will be tolerating some criminal activities, however, there's a rule against double jeopardy in certain areas where we could deal with a particular matter in terms of the code of conduct through our internal prosecution inquiries. We can take them, but for repeated offenders, then we'll take the criminal route to ensure that that is the non-compliance in question is completely uprooted. The percentage of cases of non-compliance led by the SSPs that will be prosecuted now through our legal services, we targeted to give that 70% that of all the cases that we will be receiving, 70% will be finalized. But going forward to the to following years, it will be 80-85% respectively. We will also ensure that we review the performance indicator. We review our law enforcement strategy to ensure that it is still responsive to the challenges that we meet as we progress. This, because this non-compliance, just like the criminal says, they see that they've been counteracted here. They develop new strategies, so it is important that we annually review our law enforcement strategy to ensure that it is still responsive to the current challenge. The second outcome, security business, will also the inspection of security businesses that are licensed to possess firearms in private security are fully accounted for. The number of security, the indicator that the number of security businesses that will inspect that are possessing firearms via our baseline, this is the 2014 baseline, which was 900. We have increased this year for 15-16 to 1,000 security businesses, and going forward it will be 1,100 and 1,200 respectively. As one of our strategic, another third strategic outcome will is increase compliance to minimum standards of occupations of conduct of the security service provider. This is a new indicator. The percentage of inspected security service providers, which is businesses complying with minimum standards, we want to ensure that the industry is 70% compliant in this financial year, and going forward we'll increase that to 80% and 85%. In respect of the security individuals and the security officers, we'll also ensure that they also comply to a certain level with the security officers that we, for example, in the inspect, they 70% minimum or 70% to comply. We will put the compliance indicators in our operational strategy, and the forthcoming years it will be 80% and 85%. Our quarterly targets, you see that for in respect of the strategic outcome number one, it's just like that our first quarter and second quarter that we got a high number that we need to achieve. This is due to the fact that we, the first and second quarter is where we've got a maximum capacity of the aid to utilize, but third quarter is December and January, it's full of holidays, so we will in those quarters we have lower. I will, for sake of the brevity and time, I will just skip the our quarterly targets as they are presented in there. That will end my presentation. Honorable members, thank you.
Very much. We're moving now to the next section, program 3. I think also maybe annual targets, the court list, the members have read the documents, so you can go through annuals. Thank you very much, Ms. Mufuku.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Integral program number 3, which is communication, registration and training. Our purpose is to provide effective stakeholder engagement and to ensure that we encourage people to adhere to the minimum standards, effective registration process, and also the training standards that are required. And in terms of the three sub-programs that are part of the program 3, one is communication and stakeholder relations, and the second one is industry registration. The third one is industry training, and the fourth one, which is critical also, is research and development. In terms of program 3, part of our strategic goal is industry strategic stakeholder and customer relation, and strategic outcome there to increase awareness of the publishers and the role of FIRA, which has been a key and burning issue. And I think that trying to really make sure that with our integrated approach, we drive awareness to our various stakeholders and make sure that they understand our role and our responsibility as the authority. And what we have done is to make sure that in terms of key performance indicator, we increase the number of public awareness programs around the role of FIRA to the general public, that's one. We increase the role of FIRA to the security businesses, because if the businesses don't know what are the requirements, then they will continuously not adhere to the rules of engagement. We increase the awareness to security officers, because it's also critical for them to understand the roles and responsibility, so that we eliminate code of conduct issues. And then we increase awareness in terms of industry compliance, engagement with the industry as a whole. We have compliance, industry, provincial compliance forums that we have put in place, and it's part of our key indicators. We've also highlighted engagement with government departments as part of the fiscal responsibility report as the key indicator, because we've realized that most of the government departments, they still don't understand our responsibility and the requirements, hence the challenges that are faced with so many people in that aspect. We've also planned to really make sure that we use the print media to engage with the various stakeholders. We've also identified the trade exhibition as another platform that we want to continuously explore to increase the awareness around the role and function of FIRA. Another key indicator, which is new, is to establish a Pan-African event, because we need to start talking about the role of private security and learning from our other counterparts from the continent and globally how best we can improve private security across the board. So this forum will be an annual event where, you know, we meet, we engage, we debate issues, and I think as stakeholders from South Africa and across the globe, we can learn from each other, and this is one of the platforms that we want to create for our industry specifically. And what we've also been doing is that we realize that as much as we can make noise externally, if your internal stakeholders are not fully versed of your role as an organization, the fulfillment of your mandate is going to be a challenge. So we have made that a critical aspect of strategic objective to make sure that we empower our internal stakeholders continuously on our role as a regulator. They understand we are all aligned in terms of what we communicate, how we engage with the stakeholders, we send mixed messages and miscommunications to our stakeholders. And over and above, emphasize our values, because our values play a critical role towards us fulfilling our mandate as an organization. One of the sub-programs, which is, I won't go into details of the quarterly performance because, you know, it's going to take some time. I'll just go to registration. Increasing efficiency of resolving consumer complaints. We want to really improve how we engage with our consumers from a customer service point of view. So we want to improve the turnaround time, and we have set that target clearly in our strategic objective. I think the key highlight, which should be a plus, which is a new indicator here, is the establishment of consumer offers. We've never had this before. We've realized that consumers don't have a platform where they can complain, and their complaints are properly resolved from A to Z. So we will be establishing a consumer office within the authority to address consumer issues that are related to private sector. I think also to also bring a lot of education and awareness and understanding exactly when they face those challenges, exactly how best we can assist them as a regulator. And another key aspect is when we look at the training aspect, what we've done with the training is to really focus on the whole implementation of the skills program, address the whole issue of the conversion from the grades to the entry of qualification. We're very clear now, the council has approved the policy, we're implementing that policy where we are now entering into the entry of qualification, and we've identified key things that will make this implementation a success. We need to make sure that come the end of the financial year for the year 2015-16, we have clear draft regulations on what needs to happen. We've already set up subcommittees that work hand in hand with the regulator to ensure this aspect is fulfilled, because it will deal with the issue of identifying the duration and the required minimum standard and the fees amicable to the industry. So that's what is key around the whole issue. And also in the midst of that, we want to make sure that the training providers comply. So we'll be intensifying inspections around the training providers, empowering them at the same time, enforcing compliance around how are they meeting the minimum professional as stipulated in the regulations or policy. Capacity building workshops, we're increasing that. We're setting up capacity building workshops across all 9 provinces, and also we have established a training compliance forum for the first time, and it's yielding positive results. In terms of research, what we have done with research is, as we've indicated, that we want to ensure that research continuously supports the authority's core mandate. So we've identified the number of research areas that we want to take as priorities from a point of view in respect of our strategic objectives concern. We'll be doing surveys, and this will also include surveys around understanding the consumer behaviors and how people are consuming the private security services. And we'll also be establishing partnership with institutions of higher learning. I don't know if members of the portfolio committee are aware that we have a partnership with the university. We have a CPD program for the first time that we're putting in place with the university. So through that also, research is assisting us to identify other CPD programs, continuous development programs that we can introduce to the various sectors that exist within our industry. So if you're going to be setting minimum standards, you need to understand exactly the dynamics that informs or your industry. So we want to establish more partnerships with institutions of higher learning so that our training is accessible to the various institutions of higher learning. So basically, in a nutshell, this is in summary program without going into quarterly report.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Can we maybe go to the budget as well? Okay, the budget overview. The budget was set based on the strategic objectives and aligned to the strategic plan. Revenue budget summary shows you a historical perspective on how revenue has and is expected to grow over the period. And similarly, the expenditure budget historically into the future. Increase in line with the increase in the number of security officers and security service providers registered, basically due to the annual fees which are charged based on the number of security officers employed by security service providers, and the rollout of the new certificates is expected to increase the revenue over the next 3 years. As you can see, or you'll see from the expenditure budget, that remuneration plays a large part in the expenditure. The budget growth, the revenue budget increased from 185 million in 2014-15. And I must just point out that revenue was based on the fees that were challenged in court, and so that revenue budget was overstated by the amounts that we had to pass credit notes on. But the budgeting in 2016 of nearly 200 million will be achieved. Expenditure budget is expected to grow on an average of 7.5%. If we look at the revenue budget for the 2016-17-18 period, we can see the increase in annual fees. The other income of 28 million in 2016 is made up mainly of issuing of certificates and IDs of 14.6 million, fines that are generated from non-compliance about 6.9 million, and interest income of 1.5 million. Those are the major components of our income. If we look at the expenditure budgets based on the various programs, the total expenditure is nearly 200 million for 2016, and it's based on administration consuming about 82 million of that, law enforcement 73 million, and communications 44 million. Administration takes up a lot of administration costs, so it's not allocated across all the programs, so it gives them a greater share of the budget. If we look at the program one, the administration budget, it's made up compensation of employees, which takes the lion's share, lease payments,
consultancy and professional fees. The other operating expenses of $35 million that was estimated for the 2015 period was a $12 million bad debts provision, $3 million for telephones, $2.8 million for depreciation and amortization. And the consultancy and professional fees for the 2016 budget, which shows a large increase, is essentially based on CIRA implementing a new IT system, which will require various professional fees in getting the system up and running. If we look at law enforcement, you can see that the bulk of the expenditure budget is taken up from compensation of employees. The other operating expenses are made up of legal fees, telephone, water and lights, and security. So security of the outlying offices. And if we look at communications and training, budget shows a large increase in from 2015 to 16 other operating expenses. And that's mainly made up of advertising, printing costs of new cards and certificates, workshops, publications. If we look at the capital investment program, you can see that there's a large change in from 2015 to 16 in software. That's just the new enterprise resource program that we're implementing to replace an old legacy system, which is in the process of falling over and no longer meets the requirements of the organization. To make the organization efficient, we'll need to upgrade to a more modern technology. Office equipment increase is basically new leases which are going to be signed in Port Elizabeth, Antarctica, and Cape Town, and refurbishing those offices.
Thank you. Right, thank you very much for the presentation. We will now go to questions. I think my first question relates to the budget. I'm a bit concerned if I look at the broad figures. Now, the core business is program two. We welcome the three new sub-programs. I think it's appropriate, and also the new indicators. But if we go to the slide that was just presented to us, I think we as a committee really need more more detail. I mean, for program 3 jumps with 166%. If you look at the, what Treasury said, in terms of focus areas, you see your other operating expenses jump with 855%. Now, what is that? Your travel and subsistence with 550%. And your consultancy and professional, although it's from a low base, with 3,700%. Now, if you look at your additional indicators in Program 2, shouldn't you have shifted those to your whole business? Because if you want to now go to the health sector, the residential sector, it's more travel, it's more focused, but your budget strategic shift is towards Program 3. We as a committee really need some clear explanation. What is the motive there? In terms of your core business. Right, that's the first one from my side. Let's go to the other members. Honourable Molopasi, then Honourable Kaibana.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question goes to members. Have you completed CIRA FATS unregistered integration? Thanks.
Honourable Kaibana.
what the chair has been saying was exactly one of the questions areas I found quite extraordinary, so explanation there will be welcomed. Also, the admin budget decreased by 8.8 million. Now that seems to me to be the engine room of CIRA, the fee collection body as it were. So how will that both affect operations and delivery on your targets? And at the same time, that happens, that cut is made of 8.8 million. So your consultancy and professional services increase from 2.6 up to 7.4 million. Why? I mean, are you not hiring sufficiently competent people? Are they untrained? Why can't the work these consultants do be done internally? There are a few questions in, a result in relation to indicators under law enforcement. They do speak directly to your core mandate, so that's to be appreciated. But a couple of them are a bit odd. Two of the indicators referred to as new already had targets set for them in the 2014 annual performance plan. That's on compliance and minimum standards. And why is the incorrect baseline information attributed to 2014-15 lower than the target set in the 2014 ATP? Now that's for numbers of security officers and businesses inspected. Fewer inspections? I don't understand. That doesn't seem to be correct.
Thanks, Chairperson. At the engagement we had with CIRA in February, and the question had been asked about the sort of resolution of the disputes with the Security Industry Alliance, the feedback we had was that an agreement had been reached on the way forward about registration fees, the claims of a joint media statement, and an agreement about a fairer approach going forward in terms of determining those fees. And I understand that the fees regulations were published for comments towards late February this year. So with that background, I'd just like to know what has been the feedback you've been getting from the stakeholders in the sector on the proposed fees and fee regulations for the coming year. Rabachi?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just skipped this question. My question is, your reporting format is not in line with the requirements of the National Treasurer. When are you going to adhere to it?
Another question from my side. In the previous ATPs, the authority included a breakdown of revenue estimates, which included the following items: annual fees, business fees for security officers, sundry income, training income, fine income, registration fee, interest income, penalties. And now these items are not stipulated in the 14-15 ATP and likewise also not in 15-16. Now, we as a committee, we need an explanation. Why was it omitted? And could we get maybe a breakdown of those revenue estimates for 15-16, going forward as well? Then, that a question of the IT system as well? There's a big amount that's been allocated to that. Now, with other organizations like SAP and IFED, it's a risk if that environment is not managed very closely. Now, the question is a once-off? Is it over the ETF period? You know, because consultants in the IT field, you know, they say they will develop the program, they're only there for 18 months, but 5 years later, those persons are still with you. So I just want to know the time horizon for that contract. What is the plan? Because it's also, again, about transfer of skills, and your staffing establishment is, for me, still to solve, you know, in terms of dealing with all those challenges. So I just want to get maybe feedback on that as well. What is your strategic plan to deal with the IT environment? Because it's a big amount. And in 3 years' time, when you come back, you know, are we going to have valuable money? Right. Other questions? Other problem, Mark, are you now ready?
Yeah. Finally succeeded. That would be program 2, law enforcement. The key performance indicator, I'll just pick one of these. Percentage of site inspections conducted at the retail sector. 15%. What is the 15% all about? 15% of what? Is it of retail? 15% of the sector itself? Or 15% of if it's of inspections, I can't connect the two. Let me check first.
Honorable Marky, Honorable Ramatakani.
Just a small question in terms of the program two. Maybe just a follow-up on the Honorable Marcus' question. On the indicators, performance indicators, and the baseline that is on the slide, and the both in terms of the officers, but as well as what you call businesses. That's, I think, one of the challenge that we have as the broader society and country. One of the problems that we once see is that there's a growth in the private security business, and the growth of it is quite big, including the personal growth in terms of people employed in that sector. Now, when you look at that sector and you look at your performance indicator in terms of compliance, obviously one understands the capacity that is still of a small capacity. And for the country to be able to neutralize all the negative things, including the problems of crime, because other crime comes from the security sector, internal crime. That's basically inside information. A lot of it happens from there. But now it is as a result of mushrooming of security companies. Some of them are not even registered. But for me, the question is, for us to neutralize and close that space, you would have to do lots of work in to make sure that there's a compliance, which means there's a vetting, which means there is a training that takes place. But when I look at that, and of course I look at the targets for 2050, there is of course miles apart in terms of achieving that. You will say, 4,000 from 300 to 3,870, you're going to move to 4,000, you're going to move to 4,000, you're going to move to 4,600. But that is a drop in the ocean. So the question I'm asking is, what would be the comprehensive package to address this particular problem? One is that there is a refusal of compliance by the security industry themselves, which means there must be enforcement that happens from your side. So I just want to understand that these two, in the way from where you see it, what is it that you need to do to address the magnitude of the problem? But here, it's a tinkering with that problem. And I understand it's a question of based on capacity itself. But I just want to understand from you that what you think as an industry we need to do to address in that. Obviously, it will influence what you see as a target and the performance indicator and output of it in an annual to annual basis. But if I look at up to the third year, I see it's a very slow walk compared to the problem that we are experiencing currently. Thank you, Chair.
Any other members? Right. Honourable members, let's take a 10-minute tea break. When we come back, we'll do the responses and another round. So let's just 10 minutes, colleagues, and then we come back. Thank you.